How significant is it that there is a female at the top of the ticket of a major U.S. party right now?
In my opinion, I think it's very important. I think it's important for the nation. I think it's important historically. So we've had other female candidates, but they've never gone this far, right?
Right.
And so I think that for a woman to make it past the primaries, to be the Democratic ticket holder, I think is very, very important. I think it's also really important in juxtaposition to who the Republican candidate is.
I want to get to that. Let's talk about more specific. How important is it symbolically to, quote, little girls or women who are about to maybe come into politics or voting? Mm-hmm. Is it really important symbolically to
Absolutely.
See a woman at the top of the ticket?
Absolutely.
Because we've got women, you know, that are in prominent positions in politics right now in the mm-hmm. Senate and legislature. We've got women CEOs.
Well, we don't have enough, right? So
right.
I think at the state and the local level is where we have about 25% representation. So we still don't have a lot of women who are in the national offices, right? And so to see what I think it's about 10%, 10 to 15% in the Senate, in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, it's right around 20 now for both houses.
For both?
Yeah, all the way up to 20 now.
Yeah, so I think when you're looking at that statistic, and then you have this woman who, by the way, was Secretary of State, who, of course, was First Lady. So she has a lot of experience. She's had a lot of exposure to us. That's what I mean by that. So little girls, teenagers, women in their 20s, women in their 30s have seen this candidate a lot, right? So I think that that is memorable. That's different historically. We haven't had a symbol who has been in the public eye really since the 1970s.
Well, let me put it this way then, Kyle. When you and I were growing up, mm-hmm. did you think you could become president? I mean, not you personally, but that a woman could become president? Or was it just because they were all guys, it wasn't even really thought about?
Right. I have dreamed of this moment. I really, as a little girl, I dreamed of this moment. But as a little girl, I was told a woman would never be a president. I mean, that's what I was told. And so I think that now girls who are 10 in their teens, in their 20s, they're seeing that there is a very real possibility that a woman can become president, should become president, has every right to become president. Hmm. I think some of that might have to do with Title IX. We have a lot of female representation in traditionally male sports, of course, jobs. I think the world is a very different place than when I was growing up in the 1970s.
The laws obviously have changed quite a bit since, 1920, when women won the right to vote. But still, how much of our historical socialization, you've kind of alluded to this, but mm-hmm. how much of our historical socialization of what are expected of men and what are expected mm-hmm. of women played into that it's still only 20% of women are represented mm-hmm. in Congress and we still haven't had a female president?
Right. I think a lot of it has to do with what we still don't have legally and socially. So in the United States, we still don't have a national child care program, right? We don't have a federally supported child care program. We have the FMLA, Federal Medical Leave Act, but that's only, that's unpaid, right? So there's not a program, there's not a federally mandated program that allows for women to remove themselves from the workforce for 3 months and be paid. If you have a benefit plan where you can save up your vacation, where you have sick leave, et cetera, that's what you draw on. So I think that that has a lot to do with why women don't engage more in the political process and in the labor force.
What about not unlike maybe African-Americans who essentially haven't been allowed because of laws, because of how our country has run, haven't been allowed to accumulate wealth. Is there a similar story about women in politics, that women haven't been able to be in politics for the most part until relatively recently? I mean, in any numbers, they haven't been able to build any capital in politics, any political capital. They haven't been able to build political experience. For example, the Bush family, they're able to move all these guys on. The Kennedy family, able to move these guys on. They're, I guess Hillary's kind of, you know, being able to in prominence because of Bill, but that's one of the only examples we have of something like that.
I think that's a really important point to make. And the women who are in the Senate and in the House of Representatives make it a point to network and to expand their network to the youngest female members of Congress or Senate. If you're on Capitol Hill, you're going to get a handshake from a woman the first day that you're on that hill, right? They really make a concerted effort to reach out and try to make you feel welcome. They want more women in, on the hill.
Does that go across the aisle?
Yes, it does.
Yeah?
Yes, that's what I've been told. Now, I'm not in D.C., but that's what I've been told. I'm involved with what was the Sewell Belmont Museum. It's now the National Women's Party Archive and the National Women's Equality Monument. And they hold a annual celebration around Women's Equality Day. And women from both sides of the aisle come to that. They're sitting at the table together, and they're doing business together, and they're having networking conversations with young people. So I think when it comes to trying to create an environment where young women can feel comfortable so that they stick to politics, that's really important. I think some of the earlier organizations like the National Women's Party from the 19-teens and went on into the 1920s, they really tried to create that sort of an environment for women, especially young women.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton with Kyle Ciani, associate professor in Illinois State University's Department of History and a core faculty member for the Women and Gender Studies program. Can we go back even further than the 1920s
Sure.
now? Let's
Sure.
go back to the 1870s. When the first woman that I know of, anyway, ran for president 50 years before women could even vote.
Right. Victoria Woodhull.
Yeah.
Who was a very controversial figure at the time and remains to be controversial among historians. People have called her a clairvoyant. She was a newspaper person. She was in politics. She was very much what some people might refer to her today as a media hound. So she loved publicity. She was a businesswoman first and foremost. And some historians have argued that the reason she stepped into politics in the 1870s was to emphasize her business interests and to promote herself.
What does that sound like?
Exactly. There have been those sorts of comparisons made. Yeah.
How was she viewed back then?
Well, a lot of people didn't like her. Yeah, she was viewed—
Because she was a woman or because of other reasons?
Really, it was for other reasons. People didn't, she didn't have a family lineage that was, shall we say, from the right side of the tracks. People were uncomfortable with her social status. Where did she come from? She wasn't from the elite. She was a self-made woman. There were hints of her having extramarital affairs. So, it was just, it's a made-for-TV movie just waiting to happen.
I would think as much trouble as we've had with women in powerful positions in the last 50 years, back then it must have been something else.
It was. A decade later, in the 1880s, Belva Lockwood, who is considered really the first legitimate female candidate to run for president, put herself on the ticket in the 1884 election. And she was very different than Woodhull. Belva Lockwood had been a suffragette from the get-go. She was a lawyer. She was legally trained. She had been to university. So she had the political know-how, and she also had the legal knowledge that people then and today, I think, expect of their candidate to know the Constitution, to know why being a very powerful leader is important. And she entered the fray of politics with eyes wide open. She was a respectable candidate. She was this respectable woman. But one of the things that happened with her is because she was a woman, hordes of men are going to take to the streets and protest her candidacy. And what they would do is where they would dress up in almost in drag. They would dress up in what was called a Mother Hubbard in a the Mother Hubbard dress was something that, women wore around the house. It was just a free-flowing kind of a dress. Prisoners wore Mother Hubbards, okay? No kind of style to it. And they would don these Mother Hubbards and protest her candidacy. So it and kind of the symbolism there was that we can't have this down and out woman supporting us. We need someone who has the importance of a man to be able to enter into the public sphere.
Even though she was a trained lawyer and practiced as a lawyer.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
When Barack Obama ran in 2008, I was surprised at the emails I was getting from people I thought I knew better about if Obama becomes president, how, for lack of a better way of saying it, blacks aren't going to know their place anymore.
Yeah.
Is there a similar concern that with Hillary, you know, on the ticket and could be our president, that something similar could happen?
Oh, it has been happening. And I think one of the things that's been happening, especially with Hillary Clinton, is ageism. All of this conversation about her health. Well, the counter to that, so there's all this conversation about how she can't handle it because she's a woman, right? And we can't trust her because she didn't talk about her pneumonia. But then the flip side to that is there's been a whole lot of social media countering that that has said, well, she didn't talk about it because women don't talk about it. They just do it. So
that's what I was hearing at home. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like we don't walk around with a sign. We don't talk about doing the laundry. We just got it done. Right. We don't talk about the report that we stayed up until 2 a.m. to complete because our boss asked us to have it on his desk at 7 a.m. We just had it on his desk at 7 a.m. So I think there's been a little bit of an education over this is that women don't talk about their health. Women don't talk about childcare. Okay, we get the babysitter and we get to the meeting. But what some people and what a lot of my friends and my colleagues are starting to hear is that, we never talked about getting the babysitter so that we could make the 5:30 reception for work. We just did it. But if men have to get a babysitter to make the 5:30 reception for work, we hear about it. So that's what people are starting to talk about. Those are the kinds of emails and memes that I'm seeing on social media.
Okay. I think it was 96-ish. I think it was Bill Clinton's second as he was running when they asked Hillary and the women, the wives of the candidates, to bake cookies.
Oh, right.
And she blanched at that.
Yes.
And she caught a lot of flack for that.
Yes.
So my question is, from the late 1800s through Margaret Chase Smith, Shirley Chisholm, at a high level, was there a tipping point? Is there a tipping point you can identify where, you know what, through Hillary's cookie episode,
right.
where all of a sudden, we don't talk about women like that. We don't have that expectation of them anymore.
Right.
Or are we even there yet?
Right. Well, I don't know that we're actually there yet, but I do think that Barack Obama's presidency has gone a long way to help women. And I think Michelle Obama is the reason for that.
Really?
I do. I think that she has been very clear about the position that she's going to take, that she's a working mother, right? That they're raising their two children in the White House, these beautiful girls who have been kept out. I mean, there's been this tradition to keep the children out of the limelight, right? And I think the Clintons tried to keep Chelsea out of the limelight. But I think that Michelle Obama hit her stride with the obesity campaign, with the exercise campaign. And it was the kind of thing where she said, yeah, I'm a working mom. I was a lawyer, and I'm still doing all of this stuff in the White House. I've brought my mother into the White House with our family because I can't do it all. I need someone who will help me raise my girls. So I think that she was really, I think both of them, both the president and the first lady, were really clear about no one is expected to do it all. And they did need help. And I think bringing Michelle's mother into the White House is something that's not really talked about much by the media. But that was a bold move. That was a move that couple needed. They needed someone to help them with childcare.